Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the din of the Mishnah with regards to a Derech HaRabim. The Mishnah told us that with a Derech HaRabim that traverses the field of an individual, if he wants to alter or exchange that path for another path in his field, he is not successful at doing so. Not only is he not successful at doing so, but whatever he gives to the Rabim now becomes theirs. So the Gemara originally thought the reason that it fails is not because legally it fails. It works legally, just that he has no ability to stop the people from entering the old Derech HaRabim. He can't take the law into his own hands, and he can't stop them from doing so, and therefore he loses rights to both the original Derech HaRabim, as well as the new Derech HaRabim, which he gave them and legally is binding. The Gemara then said that that's not the case. The whole transaction fails completely because he's unable to exchange the Derech HaRabim that exists with the new Derech HaRabim. But once that happens, the Gemara wants to know now, if it fails, why don't we just go back to the original state of the situation, which is that the original Derech HaRabim will belong to the Rabim, and the new Derech HaRabim will belong to this individual. Why is it that the new Derech HaRabim belongs to the Rabim? And that is the question that the Gemara begins with on the second line. You take what belongs to you, meaning the original Derech HaRabim, and give me back what I just offered you. Gemara says, Hamani Rabbi Eliezer hi. Who's the author of this Mishnah? Is Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbim Shibiru Derech Latzmam, a public that has chosen away from themselves, Mashibiru Biru. Whatever they have picked, they have picked. Gemara says, the Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbim Gazlanim Ninu? Wait a minute, the public are thieves over here? What is going on over here that all of a sudden that you're saying that they can go ahead and pick whatever path they want inside of someone's field? And then it becomes theirs, as the Rashbam says over here, Afal Pishalun Lu Rishut Mi Balasadeh. They didn't even ask permission to do such. Sounds like they could just go in and do as they please here. Why would that be binding in any legal sense? And even if you want to say that Rabbi Eliezer is the author of our Mishnah, we don't even understand the original din of Rabbi Eliezer that Rabbim can walk in there and take whatever they want. So Amar Rav Gido Marav, Kagon She'avda Lehen Derech Vota Sadeh. The case of Rabbi Eliezer is a case where they had a path through the field. They've just lost that path. They no longer know where the Derech HaRabim was in this field. So they have a right to that path, and now they're able to go and exert themselves and reclaim that path. So even though in the Gemara in Ketubot, we know that it's a machloket between Admon and the Chachamim, with regards to an individual who had a path and a person's property and that path is lost, how do we deal with that situation? What rights does he have there? Everyone will agree over here that the Rabbim have a right to establish or reestablish their rights with regards to the path. That is because v'yafek koach Rabbim mikoach yachid, because the power of the public is much greater than the power of the individual. The Rashbam goes as far as to say, Rabbim kebeit din damu, that the Rabbim, the public, can act as if they are a beit din. How far you take that is interesting, but at least in this instance, the Rashbam believes that the public at large has the same din as a beit din, and therefore whatever they decide is binding, because of the fact that they have that power like a Beit Din. And the Rashbam then sees this as an answer to what's happening in our Mishnah. And he says, V'kosha kein matnitin. Certainly our Mishnah, duhu atzmo natan lehem. Over there he voluntarily gave the path to the public at large. Umiu shelo lo higio de kansinin le. We don't give it back to him because of a kenas. V'ish natan lehem derech hakalaton. And he's unable to reclaim the old derech harabim because of the penalties that are imposed or the reasons that we saw in yesterday's daf. So according to the Rashbam, we've now gotten a conclusion as to what's happening in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer, who says in the Braita that when the Rabbim lose a path, they have a right to establish or reestablish that path and do it on their own without any intervention of Beit Din because they are acting like a Beit Din. Then certainly in our case over here, where the Mishnah says that he voluntarily gave them a location, the Rabbim over there can take that path or property and make it their own. And the exchange for the original Derech Rabbim fails only because we are Kones. We penalize him for doing such because he might have caused problems or did cause problems for people in changing the shortcut or the path that goes through his field. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot see Rav Gidol's statement as a rejection of what the Gemara said previously, that Rabbi Eliezer is the author of our Mishnah. And they say that once you establish that the Braita is speaking about a case in which a path was lost in the private field, and now the Rabbim are coming to exert their rights and reestablish that path, that's very different than our Mishnah. as the Balei Tosafot point out, that the Ri says, when it comes to a path that was lost, the Rabbim have rights over there, and all they're doing is reasserting those rights. In our Mishnah, where he gives them the path, their only rights to the path are because he's granting it, and he's only granting it because he's taking back the other path. So here they can't come and take the property in both instances, because in the case of the Braita, Miman of Shach, they have a right and a path over there. Over here in our case, it's clear that one of the two paths that they are taking, meaning that the old path and the new path, is Shalokidin, is definitely improperly so. So according to the Rishbam, this is an answer to the question as to who is the author of our Mishnah and why is it that in the Mishnah, the Rabbim get to keep both. It's because of Rabbi Eliezer, and he sees that as a Kal V'chomer out of the din of the Braita by Aveda. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot see Rav Gidol's statement of explaining the Braita as a rejection of what the Gemara's Havamina was, that Rabbi Eliezer is the author of our Mishnah, because the case of Avdel and Derech is very different than the case of our Mishnah, where he's Natan Lahem Derech, but there's only one Derech that he assumes is going to be given to the Rabbim, not that he's giving up rights to both the Rachim. So the Gemara says, Yehochi Amai, Amar Rav Bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Ein Halacha K'Rabbi Eliezer. If that's the case, then why do we have a statement from Rav Bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, that the Halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer? So according to the Rishbam, the question is, how come over here Rav is stating that the Halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer versus his previous statement where he said that the explanation of the Braita is Kishon Abdel Henderech Voto Asadeh? And over there, everybody agrees, both Admon and the Chachamim agree that the Rabbim have a right to assert their ownership over that path. And therefore, this Mishnah is Kedivri HaKol. And why would you say the Halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer when everybody agrees to that halacha of Rabbi Eliezer? Gemara's answer is, man de matniha, lo matniha. Whoever authored that position in the name of Rav was not the author of the other position in the name of Rav. Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav was a statement, and whoever believes that that was the Mesorah from Rav believes that the Mishnah, the halacha, is like Rabbi Eliezer. But if you don't explain that bright or this position of Rabbi Eliezer, which can conform to all parties, Admon and the Chachamim, then you would be subscribing to Rav's position that's brought in the name of Rabba Bar Rav Huna, that ain't halacha k'Rabbi Eliezer, because then it's not relevant to our Mishnah. Whereas the Balei Tosafot will simply read it as, how could it be that Rav is explaining the position Rabbi Eliezer in the Braita, and then we have another statement from Rav, which says that ain't halacha k'Rabbi Eliezer. Why shouldn't the halacha be like Rabbi Eliezer in that case of the Braita, where, in the case of the Braita, where Abdelahen Rabbim Derech? B'tayim Mamai. So then, what is the reason behind our Mishnah? According to the Rishbam, you can see this in the Girsa of the Rishbam, Ularabba Bar Rav Huna Matanita and Tamamai. According to Rabba Bar Rav Huna, who does not paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, then who is the author of our Mishnah? If he rejects Rabbi Eliezer's opinion with regards to the Braita and Abdelahen Derech, so then who is the author of the Mishnah? According to the Balei Tosafot, this is according to Kuli Alma. We just rejected the possibility that Rabbi Eliezer is the author of the Mishnah because the Bright over there is talking about a different case. And therefore, according to everyone, who is the author of our Mishnah? Mishum, the Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is that they're following the position of Yehuda. Dam Rabbi Yehuda, Meitzar, Shechziku Bo Rabbim, Asur Lekalkolo. A path or an area that the Rabbim have taken possession of, you're not allowed to take it back. You're not allowed to remove it from them. The Rashbam explains the case. It's a case, Shehushvu, V'tiknu Liluch. They set up the road or the path, they flattened it out, they did work on it, and the Baalim Yadu, and the owners knew about it, Vishatku, and they didn't say anything, Asur the Kalkalot, you can't undo it, Vadai the Rabbim Machal, because for sure, they already were Mochel to the Rabbim, and then Akoshekin in our Mishnah, where he gave them the path voluntarily, over there, then he doesn't have a right to rescind the gift, because it was given, and now the Rabbim have already done something with it, in order to make it theirs. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbim, b'mai konile. According to the Rishbam, this is going back to the Braita, and it's a question by Rav Huna, which is if he says that the case there is not a case of Abdel Henderech in the Braita, then Rabbi Eliezer, what is the reasoning behind his position in the Braita that Rabbim Sheberu and Derech, Latzma, Masheberu Beru? Why is that din true? B'mai konile. What did they take possession of it with? My answer is Bihilucha. By walking on it, they take possession of it. On the other hand, whereas the Balei Tosafot see it more as a generic question on the Braita, where Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Eblezer Rabbim Sheberu Derech. And the Balei Tosafot say Berur makes it sound like there was no Kenyan over here. There's no Kenyan, but my Konilet. Then how do they take possession of it? Bilucha, with the walking or traversing of that path. Titania. Halach bala orka ulirachba. Kana makom yiluchol. He takes possession of the area that he walked on. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. That is the position of Rabbi Eliezer. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, just simply walking on the path is sufficient for you to garner ownership over it, even though that's not one of the formal kinyanin that you have. Chumim say that walking is not one of your standard types of chazakot, and therefore it's not efficacious in taking possession of any property. Amar Rabbi Elazar. So the Amora Rabbi Elazar says, my time with the Rabbi Eliezer. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer, the Tana's position that walking is enough? Dichtiv, because it says in Breshit, Kum italech ba'aretz le'orka ulerachba kilecha etanena. Because by Avram Avinu it says, take possession of the land by walking its length and its width, because I've given you the land. So you see there that Avram is able to take possession of the land by simply walking on it, or establishing a chazak on the land by simply walking on it. So we'll use that as a paradigm. And that paradigm will then show us that over here, when they walk on it, it's sufficient to establish ownership. V'rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan going to do with that pasuk by Avram Avinu? Hata mishum chavivuta de Avraham ho de kamarle. That is over there because of the love of Abraham that Hashem said it to him. K'dei shi'a noach lichvosh lifnei banav. In order that it will be easy for his children to conquer the land. The way that the Rashbam reads it, in the girsa that we have here, there's a vav, a chibur here, which is that the reasons are one and the same. The love of a Kodesh Baruch Hu for Abraham is why Kodesh Baruch Hu insisted Abraham walk the land, because when he walks the land, he establishes Maseh Avot Siman Banim, the way that he walks it and establishes his ownership over it, and the ease with which he does it. That will be a Siman Banim, that will be an indication of how the children later on, when they come to conquer the land, how easy it will be for them to conquer the land and walk through the land in order to possess it. And as the Rashbam says, that's because Davaluk Yorshim Baloke Gazlanim. Because then when they re-enter the land after Yitziat Mitzrayim, Bnei Yisrael are coming back. They're coming back not as thieves or conquerors of the land in that sense. They're coming back to repossess the land that really belongs to them. And therefore, he says, Velo Yerushut LeSatan LeKatreg. And therefore, the Satan will have no right to question or prosecute or undermine Klal Yisrael's ability to take possession of the land. The truth is that there are girsaot that leave out vav from this statement, and the Ritva brings such a girsa and explains that there are actually two statements or two reasons over here. Number one is mishum chavivuta de Abraham. The reason Hashem asked Abraham to walk the land is because Hashem loved Abraham, that he wanted him to go to see the land that he was going to grant him and that which his children would inherit. And then secondly, there's a second reason that's brought over here, kadesh noach livosh lifnei banav. And the additional reason is that the land itself will be conquered in this manner and with this ease that Avraham Avinu does it. They will be able to hold on to this land or be the everlasting Yoshim of this land, even when they sin and even when they are kicked out of the land. So the Ritva sees it without the Vav as being two different reasons. One has to do with Avraham in particular, and the one has to do with Avraham as the representative of all of Klal Yisrael, or the progenitor of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, there are two reasons that are given over here. Amar Rabbi Yossi v'Rabbi Chanina, Moldim Chachamim l'Rabbi Eliezer b'Shvil Shel Kramim. Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Eliezer when it comes to a path through the vineyard. Hoil v'Nasel Iluch, Nikne B'Iluch. Since it's made for walking on, therefore it can be acquired through walking. You look in the Balei Tosafot over here, they say, Nira the Dafka b'Shvil Shel Kramim. That's only in a path through the vineyard. She'enu asui klal ela l'Hiluch. Because its only purpose is walking on it. But any other way or any other derech that has alternate or multiple uses to it, not just walking on it, then in that case you would not have the ability to acquire it through walking through the kramim. So the Tosafot severely limit this position where hiluch will help. That's in a case where the only utility of this path is walking through it. Otherwise, you can't use this as a means by which to acquire the property. Whereas other Rishonim, like the Ritva, suggest that it's just an example that's being brought here in the Gemara. That Shvil Shel Kramim means any path or any area that is generally or primarily used for walking on can be acquired through a kinyan of walking. Now, the Rashbam over here explains why the Rabbanon resent and do not agree to Rabbi Lezer's opinion over here and say, Ad sheyachzik, until you take possession of the property, what do you have to do? Lashvota karka lacharisha unal gadaru paratz kosho. All those means by which we normally assume that you can make a kinyan on property of unal gadaru paratz, where you do something physically to improve or change the property. But he says, Adam, Rina, Perakama, the Baba Kama, Emat, Havya, Chazaka, What about the statement in the beginning of Bava Kamma when it says, when is a chazaka established? Michidayish Amitzre, when he walks the borders. La bihiluch mari. That's not talking about walking around the property. Ela bagbata meitzar. But rather lifting up the borders. You've built out the borders. Vidasha karka la takenet meitzar. And now you're walking the boundaries to pound that boundary down. Ulchazko and to strengthen it. Dahim nalga daru paratz. That's the equivalent of nalga daru paratz. So unlike Rashi, who over there explains Daisha Mitzray means simply to walk around, Balei Tosafot are surprised by Rashi's statement, and they go, how could it be that Rashi says that when it's Mefurash Mishnah im Kiddushin, that the only way to establish a chazaka is now Gadaru Paratz? So Daisha Mitzray there cannot be the means or the mechanism for acquisition, and therefore the Balei Tosafot explain it differently. Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam over here, brings this sort of pshara between the two opinions. He's saying that it is a form of kinyan, like Rashi, but unlike Rashi, he's saying it's not simply walking around the property, he's saying it's walking around a property in a manner which is the equivalent of nal gadaru paratz, or in essence, what he's doing is building up the meitzar, the border, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, that between properties they used to elevate the border around, and that was a question about acquiring the property of a ger. When you elevate and create that meitzar, this is talking about when he walks on that in order to compress it or to make it more solid. So he's doing something actively in the field, and that's why he's able to create an acquisition over there, as opposed to over here where he's simply walking the path, which isn't enough or sufficient to create a chazakah. Kiatu the kamed Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami. When a case came before Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami, you can see in the Rishbam, ladun al esek adam shematne lechaveirol limkor shvil shel kramim. It's a case where he had sold the Shvil Karmim to someone, and then we're trying to determine what about the Shvil Shel Karmim. Berach, and there Rabbeinu Chananel Perish, Dibisha Avdolo Derech, Sadeh Umairi. It's a case where someone lost a path in the field, and now they're trying to figure out what's going to happen. Amalo, Habule, give it to him, Kayeka Dedari Tuna de Shvishta, so that he has the ability to carry a load of wood on his back, Vahadar, and turn around. So he needs sufficient space on that path that he can walk down the path, but not only walk down the path, walk the path carrying a huge load, not only carrying the load of wood on his back, but also the ability to carry that load of wood on his back and turn around and have maneuverability on the path. Velo Amran, and now the girsa that we have in front of us is the girsa of the Rishbam, which is Lo Amran el de Misaimin Mechitzta. That's only true where there are walls on the side of this path that he sold to him, because then the walls impede his ability to turn around or hold the load that is wide on his shoulders. So therefore he has to give him sufficient space to be able to turn around inside of those walls so that it is easy for him to maneuver, walk down this path. V'lo misaymin mechitzta, if there are no walls on the side, keichid deshakil karo menachkara, all he has to give him is enough space to put one foot down in front of the other, because then he can allow the load to spread across the field or the things that he plants, because they're not impeding the ability of this person to carry whatever load it is through that path. So he can give him the narrowest of paths and then allow the load to hang over the individual's fields. That is the Girsa of the Rashbam. You can see that the Balei HaTosafot, as well as the Rabbeinu Gershom, have exactly the opposite Girsa, and their Girsa is the original Girsaot in the Gemara, which is Velo Amran, Ela Di Lo Misaymi Mechitzta. That's only true where there are no walls on the side of the path. If there are no walls on the side of the path, then this is the standard size that you should be giving for Shvil HaKramim, and that's what he is posking over here, that has to be enough space that he can walk properly or with ease, carrying a heavy load, and then be able to turn around with that heavy load of wood on his back. But if there are walls there, then the walls will define the Shvil HaKramim. It's obvious that the walls delineated that path, and when if he sold them the path, then he sold them the path contained within those walls. The Balei HaTosafot hint to why the Rashbam changed the Girsa, because he was bothered by the fact that if you have Mechitzot there, walls there, if it's so narrow, how's he going to carry his load through there? How's he going to do anything through there? So it doesn't make sense to say that that is the narrow space, and then the wider space is the case where there are no walls there. Therefore, the Rashbam flipped the Girsa around. Balei Tosafot said that Rashbam made a mistake because he thought the walls were high walls and that would impede the ability of the person to turn around or carry the load. The truth is that there were very low walls. They were just demarcating where the path was. They weren't really high walls that would have impeded the ability of the person to carry a load or turn around there. And therefore the Balei Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Gershom, leave the Girsa or the original Girsa intact and explain it the way that we just did. Derech HaYachid Dalet Amot. The Derech HaYachid our Mishnah tells us is 4 amot wide. Tana Acherim Amim Kedei She'avor Chamor B'Maso'o. That the width of a derech hayichid is the space for a donkey and its load to go through. Amar Rav Huna halacha ka'achirim. Rav Huna says halacha is like the achirim. That's the standard for a derech hayachid that a person sells to another individual. Dayanei gola shnei gmadim umechza. The Dayanei gola say it is two gmadim umechza. There are two interpretations of the word gmadim over here. You can see in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says shtei amot umechza. The gmad is the equivalent of ama in Tanaic Hebrew. And therefore, shnei gmadim umechza means 2.5 amot. The Rashbam, on the other hand, says, Rashbam, on the other hand, brings down amot ktanot. These are smaller amot, mi pirko ad etzboltav. It is an ama or shorter ama. It's called the midget ama in a sense, which is that a normal ama goes from the elbow to the tip of the middle finger. Instead over here, the gamad is an ama that goes from the elbow until the joints of the fingers where they join to the palm of the hand. So it's a shorter ama, and that is what it's meant by the two short amot, umechza. And then he brings the alternate view, which was espoused by the Rabbeinu Gershom. Now the Dayanei Gola, as the Rashbam notes over here, are Shmuel and Karno, which we'll see in the Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin. And now Amar Rav Huna, Alocha k'Dayanei Gola. Rav Huna says the Alocha is like the Dayanei Gola. And now we have a problem. We have Rav Huna saying the Alocha is like the Acherim, that it's Chamor Masa'o. And we have him saying the Alocha is like the Dayanei Gola, which is two Gemadim Amechza, which is either 2.5 amot, or 2 small amot and a half. V'amar Rav Huna, Alocha k'Acherim, idividi chajiruhu. They are the same shiur. The shiur that is brought by the Dayanei Gola, Shmuel and Karna, is the same, or is defining what is a Chamor Masa'o. It's 2.5 amot, or 2.5 small amot, that is the size of a Shvil Yachid that would have the capacity to allow a Chamor Masa'o to traverse. Derech HaRabim 16 Amah, a public thoroughfare is 16 Amot. Tanur Banan, Derech HaYachid 4 Amot. So now we have a Braita defining for us different paths. A path of the Yachid is 4 Amot wide, like our Mishnah. Derech Me'ir Le'ir, an intercity street is 8 Amot, is 8 Amot. The reason being, as the Rashbam says, is because you need two-way traffic. You have wagons that are traveling. The wagon takes up 4 amot. If you have people going both directions in this inner city road, then you need at least a minimum of 8 amot in order to make it a derech me'ir le'ir. Derech harabim, when it comes to a public thoroughfare, 16 amot. That is 16 amot. And the way that the Rashbam defines a derech harabim is more along the lines of an interstate highway. It's a much larger road that comes from other countries, other major cities to this city. That has to be a minimum of 16 amot wide. And as the Rashbam quotes, and we mentioned this in the Mishnah, the Gemara in Shabbat that describes the Derech HaRabim or Shut HaRabim in the Midbar as being 16 amot wide because of the two agalot that were next to each other, that were parallel to each other on the road, and that defined what the Shut HaRabim was, and that's 16 amot. Derech Arei Miklat, the roads to the Arei Miklat are 32 amot. Have to be 32 amot wide, so they are double the normal size of a Rishut HaRabim. Rav Huna, my kara, where do you learn that? What's the pasuk that defends that position? Dechtiv, tachin lecha derech. Says that you have to make sure that the way is clear to the Arei Miklat. The Gemara, Darshan, other places, tachin lecha derech, that you have to put up signs which way to the Arei Miklat. You have to facilitate the ability of the person who kills Bishogeg to get to the Ir Miklat. So one of the things that you must do is actually make sure that there is a wide road and a clear delineated road that gets there. And that has to be a minimum of 32 amot because derech haderech. The pasuk could have said tachin lecha derech. What is haderech? The hay is extraneous or unnecessary. And it means haderech means add on another derech on top of it. So if a standard derech is 16 amot, Haderech means another derech on top of that, which is another 16 amot, to get you the doubling of 16 to the 32 amot that are defined as the road to the Eir Miklat. And it's got to be a road that people need to get to. I mean, it has to be something that is large and accessible because people are coming from all over to the Eir Miklat when they're running from other cities. And therefore, it's a major thoroughfare, maybe even bigger than the Derech HaRabim. Derech HaMelech in Lashi'ur, our Mishnah says that the way of the king has no measurement. And again, we discussed in the Mishnah what that's referencing to. Now the Gemara tells you, Shamelech Poreitz Geder, Lasot Lo Derech, Veim Machim Biyado. Gemara quotes from what we were going to see in Sanhedrin, which is that the king has a right to break down fences and walls and to make a thoroughfare for himself. Veim Machim Biyado, and you have no right to stop him. The equivalent of what we said in the Mishnah of eminent domain, the Rashbam limited that to warfare or the needs of the king, which are of a national nature, not simply confiscating property to use to make a new road. And we also saw the alternative in the Mishnah that's talking about a person who sold a Derech HaMelech to another person, what's the definition of a Derech HaMelech? Doesn't mean that he can go around knocking people's fences down, but it means that it's a very large thoroughfare that can take up as much space as he wants, and the person can't define for him a limited amount of space that is considered the Derech HaMelech. Derech HaKever in Lashiur, again in the Mishnah we saw Derech HaKever in Lashiur. There too, we saw two different explanations as to what Derech HaKever is. And why is there a reason that in Lashiur? Mishum Yakra de Shechva. For the honor of the mate, Kvod HaMate. As the Rashbam says over here, that the people are coming to be Melaveh the mate, we don't want to limit their space and cause them to have to move away or not be together with the mate. We want to give them the maximum accessibility to be together with the mate in order for there to be Kvod HaMate through there being Melaveh the mate and accompanying the mate. On the other hand, if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom had a different Gershom. He says, Mishum Ziluta de Shechva, that it's because of the denigration of the mate. Tzarich Harchakat Yoter, you need extra space. Shelo Yerichu Hakol Recho. So not everybody smells the decomposition of the body of the mate. And therefore, we want to give them a wide berth so that they can move away from the mate and they don't have to all be on top of the mate and smelling the foul odor that is emanating from the mate. And that is part of what we call Kvod HaMate, because it doesn't cause them then to have to be tightly packed with the mate and be forced to endure the foul odor that is coming from the mate. Hamamad, when it came to the end of the Mishnah, said the Mamad Dayeni Tzibori Amru Bat Dalet Kabim. We saw that in the Mishnah that Dalet Kabim is 2/3 of a Beit Sa'ah, and the Rashbam, we spoke about the calculation of what that space is. Tarabanan, Omecher Kivro, Derech Kivro, Makom Ma'amado, Beit Hespedo, person who sells any of these pieces of land or properties that relate to the burial of the individual, Ba'in B'nei Mishpacha V'Kovrimoto Al Korchol. The family has a right to go and bury there, irrespective of what this person sold, Mishum Gam Mishpacha, because it's an offense or affront to the family. This is the family's burial plot. This is the family's area for usage as a burial area, whether it's to give eulogies, whether it's to do the mamadot, or to physically bury the individuals. If this person, a member of the family, sold it to someone else, he doesn't have a right to do that and hurt the family in doing so. Bekam mishpacha can come in one of two ways. The bekam mishpacha can be either that this member of the family then is not going to be buried with the remainder of the family, or you could say from the other perspective, which is, then you have a foreigner or a person who's not part of the family that's buried there. So because of that pagam mishpacha, they can, in essence, confiscate the property or take it back. The Rashbam says over here that they do have to compensate. They have to return the money. They have to refund the money for what they spent because they can't just come and take it without paying back the individual who purchased it. Tana banan, ein pochatim mishiva ma'amadot u'moshavot meit. So now this ma'amad or ma'amad that we were speaking about in the Mishnah as well as in this Braita, what is the definition of this ma'amad? So all of a sudden we have here a braita that says you can't do a less than 7 standings and sitting for the mate. Keneged hevel havalim amar kohelet, hevel havalim hakol hovel. Keneged the pasuk in Kohelet that mentions the word hevel 7 times. Obviously the plurals are counted twice. And therefore for that 7 times of hevel, that is why they have these ma'amadot, moshvaot, at least a minimum of 7 times. Over here, the Rabbeinu Gershom brings the reason for these Shiva Madot. He says, Kach amar more, mipnei ma hayu osim ha-ma'amad v'yoshvim kishechozrim mi-beit ha-kvarot. Why do they do this when they're coming back from the funeral? Mipnei sheshedim melavim otan. Because the demons accompany them. Kishechozrim v'omdim ha-tzibur. When the tzibur sits and stands, v'makom echad, hochim lehem. The shedim start to disperse or leave them. And then why do they pick up dirt and smell it? And then they throw it on their heads, and behind them. It's not to ward off the demons, but so that we should remember that we are all of dust. So it's taking a lesson from the burial of the individual that we should remember or understand our fallibility, and therefore take to heart the fact that everybody in the end is going to pass away, and that we have a limited lifetime here as well as a limited capacity as human beings. And so therefore we take the dust to remind ourselves that we are the dust of the earth. So the Rabbeinu Gershom brings from his Rebbe that the reason for the Shiva Mamadot and Moshavot is to ward off the demons, because as you sit and stand, that shakes off the demons. The Rashbam quotes that reason and he says, V'leno hira. He says, I don't think that's the right reason. But rather he gives an alternative and he says, L'nachema Avel. It's in order to comfort the Avel. Olhar bot sar alamate, shemait, or to increase the pain over the death here, l'harbot b'bechi, and to cry and to, in some ways, have a cathartic experience here of letting out the pain of the death individual and the finality of that death. L'teit ish elibo l'shuv b'tshuva, and also to cause people to do tshuva. And that might dovetail with what we saw in the Rabbeinu Gershom about taking the dirt and putting on their heads and throwing behind them to remind oneself that they are kiafar anachnu, that we are just dust of the earth. And therefore that will cause the individual to do tshuva or to take the musar of the funeral along with them. The truth is that it is brought down l'alocha in Shulchan Aruch in Siman Shin Ayin Vav Siv Dalet. Over there, the Rama mentions the practice of doing mamadot and moshavot. He brings down Yeshomim Shoshvim Zain Pamim, Vinesha Ruchot Malavototo. He brings that people have the practice to sit down 7 times because of the Ruchot or the Shedim. Because Man Shoshvim Borchim Imenu, and every time they sit down, the Shedim run away or the Ruchot go away. In our places or our minhag in Ashkenaz is only to do it 3 times. And that's after they've washed their hands. And then they say, Vahi Noam Yoshev Seter, each time that they do it. So that's the practice that's noted by the Rama. The truth is that the practice is interesting depending on the minhag of the Makom and the Chevra Kadisha. In Eretz Yisrael, many places, they do the Mamadot on the way to the burial, not on the way back from the burial, and they make the 7 Mamadot, they stop, and they say, like the Rama says over here, the Psukim of Ahinoam and Yoshe B'Seter, and then they say Kaddish at each one of these stops, which seems to be more along the lines of the Rashbam's reasoning, which is the Arbot B'Bechi, and Latet Isha Libo, first to cause people to do tshuva and to increase the pain or the crying at that moment right before the process of the burial. But it's interesting that the Minhag developed to do it before and not afterwards. In some places they do neither, not before, not after. They don't do 3 or these 7 Mamadot. The Rabbeinu Gershom explains what's the meaning of this 7 Hevel Avalim. He says, Klomar, Mashnivra B'Zayin Yemei Breshit, Hevel Hu, Sufo Livalot. Whatever is created in the 7 days of creation, in the end, will be consumed or decomposed. And so one should take to heart this idea of Hevel Havalim. I think in the essence, what you can say is that the 7 days of Breshit represent this world. And everything in this world is going to come to an end, or is Hevel. And therefore, the only thing that is everlasting is the world to come. And that's what we're trying to take to heart from here, from the person who's passed away, both on a positive and a negative side. The positive side is that this person is not dead in a final sense, because they're going to continue to live in the Olam HaEmet. But also for the people who are left behind, that they should consider what they're doing in this world, because in the end, in this world, everything is going to disappear, or teva, or nature, is something that is finite, and something that will eventually be eliminated, or eventually will succumb to the frailty of humanity. And therefore, one should focus on accomplishing or succeeding in the Olam HaMet. And so that's the reasoning behind this 7 times, and corresponding to the 7 Hevel Havalim. Anyway, the Gemara over here mentions the 7 Mamadot, which is defining this Ma'amad that we're speaking about in the Mishnah. So Amalei Rav Acha, Brei D'Rav L'Ravashi, Eichi Avde. What exactly is the process for doing this? Amalei Kedetanyo. It's like the Braita. Amar Rav Yehuda B'Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, In Yehuda B'Rishona, Lo Yepochtim Mishiv'a Mamadot U'Moshavot L'Meit. They used to do no less than 7 Mamadot U'Moshavot for the Meit. Kigon. And what is this Mamadot U'Moshavot? Imdu Yekarim Mamodu, Shvu Yekarim Shevu. The way that the Rashbam explains it, it's just the opposite way around. That the individual says, after they have sat down, stand up, my precious ones, or my dear ones, and go to another location. And then when they get to the new location, he says, sit down in that new location. Amrulo, the Chachamim responded to Rabbi Yehuda and said, Im kein af b'Shabbat mutar lasot kein. Then it would be perfectly fine to do that on Shabbat. If the whole process just saying to them, stand up and sit down, you could even do that on Shabbat, and we'll see in a second in the Gemara how that would transpire. And therefore, they believe that that is not the right explanation of what the Mamadot are. Achde Rami Bar Papa, the sister of Rami Bar Papa, Nisiva Leila Rav Avya, was the wife of Rav Avya. So Rav Avya was his brother-in-law. Shchiva, she passed away. Avad La Mamadu Moshav. He made for her a Mamadu Moshav. It's not clear here who made the Mamadu Moshav. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, it was the Avad La Rav Avya Bala. Her husband, Rav Avya, did it. On the other hand, it's possible that you could read the Gemara that her brother, Rav Papa, did a Mamadu Moshav for his sister. And now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef Ta Betarte. He made a mistake in doing this in 2 things. Ta'a, the first mistake is, Sheino Simele B'Krovim. That you only do a Mamad Moshav with relatives, as the Rashbam explains over here. Relatives who are relatives, but not close enough to be avilim. So it's someone who's not an avil, but still a relative to the mate or to the mourners, but not foreigners or individuals who have no connection or familial connection to the mate. And over here, he did it even with people who are rechukim. Ta, and the second mistake is, she'enu simel biyom rishon. You only do it on the day of death, on the day of burial, v'alad biyom sheni. And he did it on the day afterwards. He did it on the second day, which is also a mistake. Abaye amar b'hai namito. Abaye says he made another mistake with doing this. She'enu simel beitak varot. That you only do this in the graveyard, or by the funeral. And he did this when they already had returned to the city. Rav amar b'hai namito. Rav said he also made another mistake in doing this. You only do it in a place where that is the minhag. And the place that he was doing it, it wasn't the minhag of the makom. You see already this idea of mamadot, the moshavot, was subject to a minhag, and it depended on the minhag of makom. And that's what you see very much in that si'if in Shulchan Aruch, and much of the things that have to do with burial, it all has to do with the minhag of makom. And that's what the Ramah is saying, Yesh Omrim, and some do this, and the minhag in this medina is, so it all is related to minhagim, and similar to today, where some places they do it, some places they don't do it, before or after. It's all subject to minhag. His only point is that he did it in a place where that wasn't the practice. So now the Gemara goes back after this little story interlude and says, wait a minute, that braita that we brought before, that the Chachamim are saying to Rabbi Yehuda, then you can do it on Shabbat, Amrulo. You say over here that the only place you can do a mamad moshav is in the graveyard itself by the funeral, then how could it be on Shabbat? You don't bury on Shabbat. And also on the day of the burial, say, what is a person doing in the graveyard or by the funeral on Shabbat itself? You're saying to me it has to be done in the graveyard, and it has to be right by the kever, and number two is it has to be done right after the funeral. So if you say that, how could you ever have such a case on Shabbat? Mar says, it is a city that is right by the cemetery, and therefore they have easy access, and they can leave the cemetery and still get home on Shabbat. And and they brought and they buried the mate right there, Benesh Mashot. Right before the beginning of Shabbat, they buried the mate. And in doing so, it closed or finished right as Shabbat began. And now they're returning to the city when it's already Shabbat. They have permission to return to the city because the cemetery is within the tchum of the city. And therefore, it's not a problem on Shabbat. Number two is, it's happening on Shabbat over here where they're walking back. And even though now you've changed days because the person was buried obviously before Shabbat during the daytime, and now it's nighttime, the Rashbam points out over here that with regards to mita on avelut, the night follows the day. And that has to do with aninut, what's called aninut laila, aninut yom echad, which is the day of the burial where you have a person who has a status of anunain, that continues mita rabbanan into the first night afterwards. So we see that there is some concept of the night following the day in avelut. And something over here, even though they buried him during the day, they could have done the mamadot, the moshavot, at night, because the rabbanan are saying to Rabbi Yehuda, if you're telling us that there's nothing about this that's a problem on Shabbat, simply that you get up and you sit down, then you could do it even on Shabbat. And so obviously the Gemara brought Rabbi Yehuda down to prove to us what this mamad moshav is. But that's all it is, mamad moshav. You could do it even on Shabbat. If you include all the other trappings of hespedim and other items that come along with it, then it would be problematic, obviously, to do on Shabbat. But if you simply define it as mamad moshav, then it could be done even on Shabbat. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Amud Bet.